Hello. In this audio snippet, we plan at least to get to talk about a second person that we wanted to contrast against Thaddeus Stevens, a person who lived during that time in the American Civil War and post Civil War period. So we hope to get to that person eventually, but before doing that, I felt a strong need to talk about a series of news stories that came out during the past week, and the reason is the reason why I have the strong need to share these, I believe, is because it just clearly emphasizes how there is no turning back to the country's, to America's eventual death a very short, few short weeks from now. And we've kind of talked about these things before, so I feel like there is a certain redundancy here, but for some reason I feel the strong urge to share about these stories and to show how clearly lost and deserving of our death as a country we are. Let me start by talking about a story, an article that came out that was posted on noqreport.com, which always redirects you to americafirstreport.com. The title of the story is Extreme Agenda. Activists are turning to constitutional amendments to enshrine abortion into law in these states. And it's by Kate Anderson of the Daily Caller News Foundation, posted on the 21st of August of 2023. Now, the reason why we want to talk about this article is not so much about the pro-abortion activists and all that. That's not the point. What I found kind of, I don't know, laughably ironic is how conservatives are now complaining about activists trying to overturn any anti-abortion laws within the states. And I find this laughable because they are so, conservatives are so, as we've shared before, so enamored with the concept of federalism because it's one of the wonderful ideas set up by the founding fathers, and this idea of states being sovereign and all that, and how conservatives have all have been willing to say, oh, Roe v. Wade is overturned. Yes, the right, because the right thing to do is to leave the abortion issue to the states. And we've said this a million times that that's one of the fundamental flaws of federalism. Federalism tends to believe that truth can be regionalized, that for some reason something is valid if you're within the boundaries of a certain state and not if in the boundaries of another. And that's how you can start protecting certain deep human right violations by just putting a state fence around it. And that's how slavery became a stronghold in America. It was protected by federalism, by state boundaries, saying, slavery is the right thing to do. If you're in Virginia, if you're in North Carolina, if you're in South Carolina, or if you're in Georgia, or if you're in Tennessee, or in Texas, and or Alabama, or Mississippi, and so forth, or Louisiana. So it became a a way to justify not recognizing evil and dealing with it. And so, yeah, if our system is so inept that we cannot, based on our constitution, defend a fundamental human right or oppose a fundamental human rights violation, then let's just say, oh, let the people of each state decide what they want to do. Instead of saying, hey, there's something wrong with our constitution that is allowing this evil to happen, or that is preventing something good happening. But that's where the conservatives and the founding fathers and the founding father worshippers all seem to become blind. They are so enamored with the system that instead of saying let's fix the system, if our constitution cannot protect the life of the unborn, then let each state decide. Instead of saying, hey, there's something wrong with the constitution when we cannot use it as a foundation to establish a legal, a clear legal precedent that the life of a fetus needs to be protected. And as we've said a million times before, it's because the constitution doesn't have the really well-defined concept of the right to life. The Constitution does not protect the life of the born, of the ones who've already been born. So how in the world can it possibly protect the life of the unborn? It doesn't protect the life of a dog. It doesn't protect the life of a human being, a full-grown adult. As we've said a million times, if somebody gets killed in America, yes, the person died, but technically, according to the Constitution, when that person got his brains blown out, his constitutional rights were technically not violated, because there's nothing in the Constitution that protects that person's right to a physical existence. And yes, the right to life is in the Constitution, but it's in a very vague and limited way. When it talks about the right, the freedom of expression, freedom of religion, and all these things, freedom of assembly and whatever, those are kind of manifestations, very concrete, discrete manifestations of the right to life. But it's so limited that there is nothing else there to go by. And that's why we needed to establish a new American Constitution where these fundamental principles were well established with very clear guidelines. And when we spoke about the right to life, which is one of the five pillars, the five fundamental human rights that would have gone into the new American Constitution, we spoke about these clear concepts, what life is, how to identify life, and that would have meant that the Constitution would have started protecting even the life of animals to a certain degree. Obviously, it doesn't mean that we all have to become vegetarians and not be able to eat chicken or whatever. That's not what we were saying. So if you ever go back to, if you ever have a chance to listen to those audio snippets, you will see that the principles we were laying out. But the thing is that the Constitution needed to be well defined with the five fundamental human rights, with the other five pillars to define what true authority is, and that's how then we can say, yeah, okay, now we can go ahead and establish legislation that is valid and right, and not regionalize it. So the thing is, what I'm trying to say is the conservatives try to look the other way when the Constitution proves itself worthless and useless by saying, oh, well, whatever the Constitution did not talk about, let's just resolve it at the state level. And that's just a cop-out. It's just a lazy cop-out. And it's insulting to the truth to be telling the truth, hey, You're one thing in Virginia, you're another thing in Maryland, you're another thing in Delaware, you're another thing in Pennsylvania, you're another thing in New Jersey, and so forth. It is stupidity, just total stupidity to think that way. It's just laziness in trying to get to the real truth. That's why I find this story laughable. Not so much, my outrage is not so much about the abortionists trying to overturn abortion laws by doing their activism and it says activists are turning to constitutional amendments to enshrine abortion into law in these states. So isn't that interesting? The left wing nut jobs are how shall we say, they seem to be more kind of in tune with reality in some ways, because they say, oh, yeah, the Constitution is not protecting our right to kill fetuses. So we need to change the Constitution to make it a valid thing. So they are doing their activism instead of saying, oh, you know, let's just... But they're doing it at the state level. And that proves that federalism is a useless way to protect truth from oppression. So it's like saying, yeah, if truth is being oppressed in one state, oh, then you just go to a state, a red state, where that truth is protected, where that freedom is protected, or whatever. And as we've said before, federalism is a useless way to protect people from oppression, because eventually the oppression reaches, will catch up to you. It will reach the state that you have fled to and destroy the freedom that you fled that state for. That's why I find this story so laughable. It just exposes the stupidity and the weakness and the ineptness of federalism. And these conservatives, I'm not even going to read the story. They are kind of out. The person who wrote the story, who is clearly a conservative, is outraged about how these people are, you know, trying to play the system, the federalist system, by going into the states and then trying to overturn or promote constitutional amendments that will legalize abortion. I don't know, and they say these things and they just don't see their own stupidity. It's so clear if you're seeing the truth how ridiculous the outrage is. Not so much that I'm not talking about the outrage over abortionists trying to promote abortion. It's the outrage of the system, the strategy they're using, but they don't realize that their own conservatism enables this type of strategy. It always begs the question, well, if abortion is wrong, why can it be allowed in any state? And it went with the same, by the same token, if slavery was no longer valid, why are we allowing it in certain states? Well, we're allowing it because of federalism. And doesn't that bring into question the whole system of federalism? Of course it does. But conservatives never want to go there. It's as the country's dying, they still don't see it. They refuse to see it, and they will die without seeing it. That's why this country's dying. So the second story that I wanted to share... or try to share on very quickly, from realclearpolitics.com, and it was posted on the 23rd of August of 2023 by Tim Haines. That's the name of the person, and the title of the article is Bannon, like Washington and Lincoln, the destiny of America is now tied to the fate of one man, Donald Trump. So they are talking about a quote from Steve Bannon, And he tweeted out this quote. Let me just read the full quote here. This is only the third time in history that the destiny and fate of an individual been tied directly to the fate of the nation. General Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and now Donald Trump. The fate of Trump is tied to the fate of the nation now. And the only reason why I want to share this quote is the sadness of it, because so that's where we are right now with conservatives. The destiny of the country is tied to Donald Trump, and we've talked about him and said what a failure he was. And that's the man that they are saying, hey, you know, it's like somebody putting, you know, going for broke. They've been losing and losing money, you know, gambling away their life savings, and they're putting that, you know, all that they have left, a double or nothing on this one number, and they're waiting for the wheel to turn, and all their chips are on that one number. And it's Donald Trump. Instead of saying, hey, you know, we shouldn't have been playing like this all this time. There's something wrong. We're putting our trust in the wrong thing. No, no. Doubling down. Like, no. It hasn't worked before, but this time it's going to work because we are right. He is the last hope that conservatives have. Instead of them seeing there's something wrong with our system, all these Christians were complaining about the country falling apart, instead of going to, you know, bending down on their knees and saying to their God, God, I don't know what is wrong with us. What are we doing wrong? Because we keep asking you to change things and things don't change and things get worse. And it just, there seems to be no hope. It's just all falling apart. The country is being destroyed, and you're not listening to us. What are we doing wrong? Instead of doing that, they go, no, we're right. We just have to have a little more faith in. Hip, hip, hooray. And the only hope that they have is Donald Trump. Yes, Donald Trump. We have to reelect Donald Trump. And somehow get him reelected. I don't know how, because elections are fraudulent. The whole system is broken down, so I don't know, but that's our hope. And he and Steve Bannon here, unfortunately, kind of quoted what is in everybody's heart. And what is so sad about it, aside from putting all their faith in Donald Trump, is that Steve Bannon puts Donald Trump at the same level as Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. And the fact that he includes Abraham Lincoln is what makes this tweet even more laughable. And then you would know, if you've been listening to the audio snippets, you know what we think about Abraham Lincoln, son of a bitch, worthless, half-hearted bastard who destroyed the opportunity, the golden historic opportunity he had to fundamentally correct what was wrong with our country back in the 1860s, when we still had time to kind of to straighten ourselves out. And he didn't want to go there because he did not believe in quote, radicalism. He wanted to be a moderate. He was a rhino. He was an 1860s rhino. And we have elevated him to this position of the greatest president, or possibly the second or one first or second greatest president of all time, when he was a worthless son of a bitch. He left us Andrew Johnson. He was happy to have Andrew Johnson as his vice president. And when his brains got blown out deservedly, then we got stuck with Andrew Johnson, who just made everything that was in his power to prevent black people being truly liberated in the South. He hampered Reconstruction. And it was all due to Abraham Lincoln, because he wanted to have a Southern Democrat as his vice president. In the middle of a fight against the Southern Democrats who were hell-bent on killing other Americans, just to protect their, quote, right to own slaves. He wanted to sound conciliatory and see, oh, I'm not a radical crazy nut job. I just want to show you how moderate and welcoming I am. So I'm going to have my little Southern Democrat right next to me. So in case anything happens to me, South, this is the guy who's going to lead the country. And John Wilkes Booth said, oh, awesome. And he went ahead and did what he did. And then Andrew Johnson became the vice president. But and as we've said before, even if Lincoln had lived, I think the outcome would have been, at least in terms of Reconstruction and all that, it would have been similar, if not worse in some ways. But Andrew Johnson was a reflection of what Abraham Lincoln was on the inside, the side of him that he always kind of masked, but who he really was in a kind of a deeper sense. So it's sad that Steve Bannon is, you know, part of the group of people who in America who worship Lincoln, and so he puts them at right there with Trump as like the three men who have defined the destiny of the nation, on whose shoulders the nation's destiny resides. And Abraham Lincoln was not the one who preserved the Union. It was Ulysses S. Grant. It was William Tecumseh Sherman. It was other people. It was Hannibal Hamlin, his first vice president. It was all the it was people like it was the it was the intangible value of people like Thaddeus Stevens and John Brown and all these men. These were the men who quote saved the nation. These were the men who ended slavery and allowed the country to continue from the 1860s forward, to continue as a viable nation that eventually grew into a world superpower and all that. They were the ones. Abraham Lincoln was always getting in the way of himself. It was until he said, okay, I'll let you guys do your thing. When he finally let go, that's when the Civil War was won and slavery was ended and all of that. But he was always getting in his own way on purpose because he didn't want to go there. But it's as if the truth kept forcing him. You will go there. You will go there whether you like it or not. And he went there reluctantly. And then when he was about to continue getting in the way, he got shot in the head. Deservedly so, and got thrown out of the way. But unfortunately, he left behind what he really was on the inside in the form of Andrew Johnson. It's sad that, so it's kind of laughable that, yeah, Donald Trump is our next Abraham Lincoln. Oh, wow, that's wonderful to know. That's really wonderful to know. And the weird thing is that he said General Washington. Instead of saying George Washington, I'm not sure why he did it like that. And that's probably the only name that is salvageable from that list of three names that he gave. And what I get from that is we never outgrew George Washington. Conservatives never outgrew George Washington. And to the point, I don't know why he called him General Washington. I don't understand why he did that. And then he said Abraham Lincoln and now Donald Trump. I know Washington was a general. Don't get me. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is why it's so interesting he didn't use Washington's first name, just General. And I think there's a lot there kind of that's beneath the surface in that one little word that he kind of changed. But the thing is that conservatives never outgrew the 18th century. They never grew past what the Founding Fathers left behind, which was so flawed. And that's because we never outgrew that. That's why the country is dying. So it's sad. These people are putting their trust in Trump. He's their last hope. You know, that's like saying, I'm going to put my trust in Uganda winning the World Cup, the next football World Cup. And as you know, as we've said before, there are no more World Cups. But if there were, you know, no more World Cups in the sense that World Cups that count, as we've already said ad nauseum several times. But it is kind of in that vein, assuming that World Cups exist still. It's like saying, I'm going to hope, my hopes are that Uganda is going to win the next World Cup. And that's why the country's dying. And the next, the other story that we wanted to talk about is, it was posted on August 23rd, 2023 as well, and it's by J.D. Rucker. It was posted on NOQ Report, which always redirects you to AmericaFirstReport.com. I don't type America First Report, first of all, because it's a very long domain name, and second, because I don't like the America First part, and that's not because I'm anti-American or anti-patriotism. That's not it. It's just that you put the truth first, and then truth will make America flourish and prosper. That's how you do it. Your focus is on the truth, then America will prosper. You don't put America first, because when you put America first, you end up many times putting the truth second. And I'm not going to go for that. No can do. It's the truth first. Then America will reap the consequences of us putting the truth first. But okay, but that aside, the thing is that this article is entitled "The Adversary is Shifting Strategies and We Must Do the Same." And this is by this fellow J.D. Rucker that we've talked about before, that I have come to believe he is in a certain way, he may not realize it, but I think that in a certain very deep way, he is the leader of the conservatives, this J.D. Rucker fellow. And leader in the sense of the one who has gotten closest to the River Jordan and who had within his power the ability to call other conservatives to join him in crossing the River Jordan. This man has made a lot of sacrifices in his life to do what he does. So I laud him for that, but that aside, he's made all these sacrifices, fighting for the country and all these things, personal sacrifices. He could have had a more comfortable life, but he chose to fight for what he believed in. But the sad thing is that what he believed in was always incomplete. And he had a sincere desire to complete that truth, but unfortunately, he put boundaries around how far he was going to go. And he was just never willing to cross the fences that he put up himself. But he was probably the person in America who got closest amongst the conservatives to the River Jordan and to actually, you know, getting to cross it. But he turned back at the last minute and said, no, I can't do that. And I'm going to read part of the article, and it will be clear why he didn't cross the River Jordan. And that he is like the epitome of why conservatives allowed the country to die, which is going to happen in a few weeks from now. I'm going to read here. As a quote conservative from a traditional perspective, I am inherently averse to change. One can characterize my mindset as, quote, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, unquote. Especially as it pertains to political and cultural strategies. I believe we have suffered in the past from too many people trying to reinvent what conservatism even is. When I read this initial paragraph, I said, oh my goodness, it's like this guy's been listening to the audio snippets, but instead of learning from them, has doubled down on his beliefs. I don't think he's listened to any of these audio snippets, but I think in the atmosphere, he has heard it. I know he has heard it in his dreams and in his thoughts. I know that. But I don't think he has literally listened to these audio snippets. Even if these audio snippets are not listened by a great number of people audibly, I know they're being inaudibly heard by millions and millions of people. I know that in my inner being. And so if he's said things here that we've talked about in audio snippets literally. You know, how we've talked about conservatism is about not changing. The word itself just is embedded with unwillingness to change. You want to conserve. You don't want to transform. You want to conserve. And we've actually even literally quoted this thing, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. One of the problems with the American culture and conservatism in particular is that idea, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, and if it ain't broke means if it's not visibly broken. But the problem is sometimes things are broken, but the problem, the brokenness is in the foundation. And then that brokenness in the foundation eventually gets reflected in the visible part of the house or whatever. And that's when people start complaining. And what conservatives always do is when they see there were problems in the foundation from the get-go that we've talked about ad nauseum, and the country kind of survived through it. You know, there were problems, but we just kept pretending like everything is okay. It's not broke, so let's not fix it. And then eventually the problem just got bad and bad, and the house started getting destroyed. And conservatives kept saying, oh, it's the tenants living in the house now. They're destroying the house. But they don't understand that the tenants who are living there right now are living there because of the foundation, the problems and all the holes and the vacuums in the foundation. That's what allowed these tenants to be living in this house, the ones who are destroying it and are destroying it so easily because the foundation of the house is so bad. But they don't see that. No, we just have to get these tenants out of the house. Well, they're in the house because of the foundation. No, they're contrary to the foundation. No, the foundation. Yes, they may be, quote, contrary to the foundation, but they, in a sense, they are not. But they're there because the foundation was so bad that it left so many vacuums, so many things that have enabled these people to be there. And they keep insisting, no, we just need to get the tenants out of the house. No, the tenants are there because of the foundation. No, the foundation is solid because it was established by our founding fathers. Oh, yeah, and who the hell cares who put the foundation? If somebody tells me 2 + 2 = 5, I don't care who he is, what his historical standing is. 2 + 2 = 5. It's 4. So let's correct it because we're doing all these equations trying to send a rocket to the moon, and it's all based on 2 + 2 = 5, the rocket is not going to get there. I don't care, you know, how much you love the person who wrote 2 + 2 = 5. I don't give a damn who he was, how important he was historically, or how great of a human being he was. He said something that's not true. Let's not live by that anymore. But no, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We've lived by 2 + 2 = 5 for 247 years. Let's keep on going with it. See how far it got us? And as we've said before, we've gone this far and been the successful nation that we were, you know, in so many ways, despite the foundation, not because of it. It's like a team that has had these outstanding individual players throughout the years, and they've succeeded because of the players, these players have been compensating for the crappy system, playing system, strategy system that we've had. So that's why we are where we are right now. And then he goes on to talk about how the adversary is changing strategy, so we must adjust. But I'm reluctantly adjusting because I'm a conservative and I don't like change. And I would go into the article, but I think it's kind of like it is pointless because he's talking about strategy when the problem with conservatives is not their strategy. The problem is their belief system is flawed. It's not based on the truth. It's based on false idols, worshiping of false idols. And the false idols are their founding fathers. The Constitution, as we said before, to them, the Constitution is like the 67th book of the Bible. It's as if after Revelation comes the U.S. Constitution in their Bibles. It's the next book. And you can do all the strategizing you want, but if you're believing something like that, if your thinking is so flawed, no matter how much strategizing you're going to do, you're going to fail. So that's what I wanted to mention here. I'm scrolling through the article, but it's all meaningless. Let me read the last two paragraphs. Last two or three paragraphs, just to kind of, he goes through a whole bunch of things, and it's pointless to even talk about them, because it is much ado about nothingness, in the sense that it's not relevant to what he needs to do. So let me read the last two or three paragraphs. He wrote, "Many have seen what we're going through as a nation as a new civil war. I disagree. In my opinion, our situation seems more and more akin to a new revolutionary war. It's not Democrat against Republican, North against South, red state against blue state, nationalist against globalist, or even right versus left. It's us versus them. The adversary," and he says the adversary is Satan, "the adversary doesn't care about your political leanings. The adversary only cares about destroying most and controlling the rest. We must make our stand now or crumble under the weight of our nation's demise. Lord willing, we can." Now, what I find interesting is Revolutionary War. So he's going back to the Revolutionary War. See, they never outgrew the 18th century. That's what I'm saying. We never outgrew the 18th century. He doesn't even want to see it as a civil war, because the civil war is inherently a stain on federalism. So he doesn't even want to go. He wants to go back to the Revolutionary War. We're just like the patriots of the 1700s fighting against the adversary. They were fighting against, the British were fighting against the liberals or whatever, whomever. And it's ironic that he calls it a new revolutionary war, because a revolution is to bring about a foundational change in the culture. And he started the article by saying, "I don't want to change anything. If it ain't broke, don't fix it." So he's saying, "I just want to go back to the way things were." That's what he's basically saying. That's not revolutionary. That's, I think they call it reactionary. It's the opposite of revolutionary. He just wants to go back to the way things were. He's not trying to revolutionize the country to put a new foundation and start a new country. Because in a sense, flawed as the founding fathers were and all that, the Revolutionary War was about a change, foundational change in our system. We were British subjects, subjects of the King of England, and then we decided the monarchical system ain't working out. We need a better system. So we had a Revolutionary War to establish a better system. Yes, it was better than the than monarchy, I guess, but it had flaws in it. But it was revolutionary, quote unquote, for its time. It was really not that revolutionary. The Romans had a republic, you know, back, you know, 500 years before Christ, and the Greeks had democracy, you know, full-blown democracy, you know, a long time ago, too, and we just borrowed some stuff from the ancient times, from the Romans and the Greeks, and kind of put it together and said, "Oh, you know, we don't like this, we don't like that, let's just leave a little bit of elitism and some power clots here and there, and we don't want too much democracy. And they just put this hodgepodge based on what the Romans and the Greeks had done with some quote improvements, and we made it a workable system. We became the first non-monarchical system that really thrived, but it wasn't because of the system per se. There were some good things foundationally. This belief in individual freedom, these things were there, but they were never really fully developed. But the concept was there and it was strong enough. And the character and the integrity of the people was good enough for the country to flourish under that new foundation. But what I'm trying to get is yes, there was a revolution there. There was a fundamental transformation of the colonies that turned them into a republic. But so when he calls it a new revolutionary war, what are you going to change foundationally? What are your thoughts? What is your revolution? What are you fighting for? If this is your new revolutionary war, the revolutionary warriors of the 18th century knew what they were fighting for. We want a republic. We want a free country that's not under monarchical tyranny of King George III. And I guess I'm beginning to wonder, maybe that's why Bannon didn't say George Washington. I don't know, maybe that's part of it. He didn't say George because that was also the name of the king of England that we separated ourselves from. But at least the thing is, the revolutionaries of the 18th century knew what they were fighting for. And I'd ask J.D. Rucker, what are you fighting for? What is your cause? Oh, the cause is to return to the past. Oh my goodness, that's not revolution. That is reactionism, or reactionism, if that word exists. I read this and I go, my goodness, he doesn't. So he refuses to shy away from the concept of it ain't broke, don't fix it. He proudly says it as the introduction to his article. As a conservative, from a traditional perspective, I'm inherently averse to change. Instead of saying, I have been inherently averse to change as a conservative, and I'm ashamed of it, and I know that that is part of why we are where we are as a country. Instead of like having this epiphany, this light bulb moment, say, oh, that's part of the problem. That's why we're not growing. That's why he's a Christian. So he could be saying, this is why God doesn't tell me what we need to do to change. That's why everything we're doing doesn't work. Instead of that, it's like, no, doubling down. No, I am a conservative, and my motto is, thou shalt not make changes unless you're completely, completely, completely obligated to by circumstances. That's why we're dying. It's so sad. Another article that I wanted to share about is a quick one. This is from the Gateway Pundit, posted on August the 24th, 2023, by Jim Hoft, that we've criticized in the past. But I'm just going, my intent is more or less to just talk about the headline. The title of it is, we did nothing, it's a quote, we did nothing wrong, I did nothing wrong, and everybody knows it, unquote. And then it says, President Trump speaks after Georgia arrest, because he was arrested in Georgia last week and then let go. I think he had to pay $200,000as bail to be set free. I'm not too sure. I honestly don't care too much about those details. And the thing is that that's the quote, and that kind of kind of hit me when I saw it. We did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong, and everybody knows it. And yes, I agree. Technically, he did nothing wrong. He's being accused of all these phantom charges because they're trying to knock him out. Democrats, they don't want him around, and they're trying to destroy him because that's how they operate. So I understand what he's saying. I agree in a technical sense, he did nothing wrong. All these are false accusations and just bogus political persecution. But to me, it was that statement was more than just him defending himself against the charges. That's his stance on everything. He went 4 years. He did so many stupid things, made so many stupid decisions. He had Jared and Ivanka in his ear all the time. These two traitors, that bitch and that son of a bitch, bastard boy. And he had all these traitors around him. He did all these stupid things, all these stupid mistakes. And to this day, he doesn't really admit that he did anything wrong. We've talked about, you know, he did Operation Warp Speed. He put Tony Falsi on center stage to tell the country what to do, what not to do. He made press conferences, then put these people there to talk. He allowed the lockdowns to happen. He started handing out money willy-nilly, you know, all this bailout or kind of like lockdown money that people were sent. I was sent a card. And it was one of these debit cards, or two of them, I think. And I even got notifications, did you get your card? Because they noticed that I wasn't using it, and to this day I haven't used it. Because out of principle, I said, I'm not going to use that money. That money should not be handed out like that. We shouldn't be in a lockdown to begin with. So I never used the money, and he thought he was kind of being asked. And you think that any of the people who got that money gave him credit for that? No. To them, to all those people, that money came from the Demonrats. It didn't come from him, even though he was more than willing. And I don't know if he was the one who came up with the idea or went along with it very happily, and he promoted it, and he thought that that was showing that he was in charge, that he was caring for the American people, and the people who hate him. And he could do all that he could buy them a house, a mansion, and do everything for them. But the people who hate him will hate him regardless. And he didn't understand that. He thought he was doing the art of the deal. He thought he was showing true compassion, blah, blah, blah. No. And all he did was increase the national debt, open the door for inflation eventually, and all these things. So he did a lot of, quote, good things in a technical term, but it was all superficial. And he did many good things with increasing energy production, domestic energy production, which is what fueled, literally, the tremendous economic growth that happened during his administration. And when Bite Me stopped that, that's what led to inflation, because it just led, when he cut off energy production, it just made everything more expensive. And the lockdowns contributed to logistic issues, which also increased prices. But the thing is that the core reason for inflation, the inflation we've had, is the ending of domestic energy production. That's what you know. Once oil is more expensive because it's not being produced as much and as cheaply as it was during the Trump years, then obviously everything is going to go up in price. It's just natural. And on top of that, we had all this extra money, stupid money, being put in, you know, being given out for free by the federal government. That also contributed to the inflation. But the thing is, he did a lot of good things, but it was all superficial. And all that superficial stuff, boom, in 1 year, it got all wiped out. That's how superficial it was, because it was shallow. It wasn't, he never dealt with any root deep issues. He was not a transformational leader. He was not. He was just a very successful businessman that made the economy successful for a few years, but it was all superficial. And he did all these fundamental mistakes, and he is the one who is to blame at the end of the day for his own downfall and exit from the White House. Even though he won the 2020 election, he made everything possible. They were all doing these lockdowns and everything under his nose, preparing the country for the fraud in November. That's where it was all headed for. And they did it under his nose. He didn't even notice it. He didn't even see it coming. I don't think he even saw it coming. And that, but still, he stands strong and says, "I've done nothing wrong." And this quote is not just about him, and the accusations that the Georgia whore has thrown at him, the Georgia slave, because she is a slave to the white liberals who control her. Pathetic, pathetic whore. But the thing is that this is more than him talking about those accusations. This is him about his life and his quote presidency in general. He still doesn't admit that the injections that he promoted are killing people. He doesn't want to admit that. He said, "Oh, I'm opposed to them being mandated," but he's never said, I repent and I recognize those injections have killed millions of people, and that I, in my stupidity, contributed to all these people dying." He's never done that. So this is a guy that Bannon says the country's hopes are tied to. No wonder the country's dying in a few weeks. A man who said, "I've done nothing wrong," and this is not just him saying it. It's all conservatives saying the same thing. It's everyone who supported the founding fathers and the Constitution all this time. We've done nothing wrong, and everybody knows it. And I don't know why our God is not helping us. The God that we worship in church every Sunday, I don't know why he's not helping us. But we've done nothing wrong. And all that's going on in the country is the fault of the liberals running amok. And that's why the country's dying. So the other thing that we wanted to mention very quickly is that as the country's dying, as the world is preparing for a post-America atmosphere or world, and just to emphasize that, there's this article, and I'm sure many of you have heard about this. This article was posted on thegatewaypundit.com and posted on the 24th of August, 2023. The title of it is BRICS Summit, Day 3. Event wraps up with six new members, a new geopolitical stance, and a new defiant attitude. So BRICS, BRICS, I think stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, if I'm not mistaken. BRICS. And they have had this coalition, and six new members joined apparently. Let me see. I forget. Okay, let me see if I can find the names of the countries. It's just wow, a wonderful group of of countries that joined. Saudi Arabia, where women couldn't drive until I think last year or whatever. I don't know. Maybe they still can't drive, but I think I heard that they finally let them drive cars. And then another, the other group, country that joined is Iran, the wonderful democracy of Iran. Then Ethiopia, famous for its for its problems feeding its people, unfortunately. Ethiopia has a lot of there's something very special about Ethiopia, but unfortunately Ethiopia is trapped in some things. But I do feel for the people of Ethiopia. They are very special people, I must say. It's a very special country, but it's trapped in many things. And then Egypt. And then the other country is Argentina, the wonderful country of Argentina that we've talked about so many times. So those are the six wonderful new nations that have joined. But it's a sign, of this shift of the world kind of saying, yeah, America is no longer number one. And they're trying to form this coalition of countries that will supposedly replace America. In the world stage. So it's just that shift that's going on. as the world kind of inadvertently, without realizing it, realizes that America is dying in a few weeks. So the other story that we wanted to talk about is about this Oliver Anthony. He's the guy who, I think his actual name is something like Anthony Lunford or something like that. I forget what his full name is, but that's his, Oliver Anthony is kind of like his stage name, shall we say. And he had this song, and the song got to number one in America, and kind of, it was a shocker because he had no recording history. He's just a guy who recorded a song, and it just went viral, went crazy, and it literally made it to number one on the Billboard charts, topping other artists that are, I couldn't name the top 10, not five of the top 10 songs, or even maybe four or three of the top 10 songs in America right now, even if my life depended on it, because I don't care about that, about, you know, American music and music in general right now. It's become mostly rubbish. It's just rubbish. It's just worthless. So he's been able to be at the top of the trash heap with his number one song that took the country by storm, and he's become this, you know, media sensation and all that. And the song is about complaining about the, you know, the rich man north of Richmond, in other words, the rich man in Washington, D.C. And the conservatives have taken him as a that's our anthem now and stuff like that. And we talked about how I personally just don't care for the song. I've been tempted to listen to it, but it's like, no, there's something that repulses me about the guy. It bothers me. It's like, and he looks like a decent guy. He looks like it. But there was something always saying within me, no, don't even listen to it. Don't. He's not from the truth. He may want to sound like he's from the truth, but he's not from the truth. So I had this aversion to him from the beginning. And kind of feel sad. He said he wrote the song because he was dealing with depression and addiction, and he wrote it as a way to, you know, deal with that and all that. So wonderful that he used it to relieve his addiction and his depression. That's so nice of him. But the thing is that now it has turned into something that shouldn't be. And let me read what he said just to show you what I'm trying to get at. He says here, singing sensation Oliver Anthony was interviewed at his recent concert performance by a reporter for Fox News. He says the footage was just released, and in the clip, Anthony suggests that the United States won't last for more than another generation if we don't change course as a country. When I read that, I said, oh my goodness, and by the way, the title of the article is Oliver Anthony Says U.S. Won't Last More Than Another Generation Unless We Change Course. And it was posted on the Gateway Pundit by Mike LaChance, on August 21st, 2023, if you want to go read it. The thing is that when I read more than one generation, it's not going to last more than a few weeks. But I said maybe this guy is on, you know, maybe his antennas are still growing, so he's not catching all the waves, all the signals yet. But maybe he's getting there, I thought. But as I found out more about him, the answer is no, he doesn't know what he's talking about. But it's interesting, he does sense the demise of the country. But I think that's, you know, we are all sensing it. We just don't want to say it out loud, most of us. But it's not going to last more than another generation. So this guy doesn't even see how dramatic the end is, you know. It's not another generation. It's a few weeks. That's all we have. and then we'll be done. And I don't, and I'm not holding my breath, hoping for anything. I know we're going to die. I mean, I just know it. there is not going to be any change, unfortunately. The country is going to die. And I say we in a certain very generic sense, because I'm kind of washing my hands off of this. Like, I can't, I'm not responsible for this. Now I'm going to quote Trump. I did nothing wrong in that regard. I did everything I could. I did so many sacrifices in my life for this country to change. So many sacrifices, and so little to show for it. So little return. It is interesting to me how this guy, who, as you will see, was not really for the truth, and is a, you will see what he is, I hope, after we talk about him in this article and another article. This guy, out of nowhere, just puts out a song that, you know, strikes a few chords in people's souls. And then suddenly he's number one, and everybody, you know, clamors after him, and he becomes this sensation. We've been posting all these concepts, all these ideas, on the website where these recordings are posted, for almost for over 19 years, faithfully posting and posting and posting, and it has never caught on, when it should have been like a flame, you know, like a flame that you throw into a forest, a densely vegetated forest. It should have grown like a wildfire, and it's interesting, it grew like that. Growing like wildfire happened with this guy singing a meaningless and useless song. Useless song. It is a meaningless and useless song, but America said, oh, let's rally after that. But the truth that we're going to change this nation, no, I'm not interested, thank you very much. So to me, his meteoric rise to success shows that, yeah, it is possible. If you have something interesting, this country will want, there is, you don't have to be in a position of power or a position of notoriety for your message to catch on with millions and millions of people if they're willing to listen. He just shows how possible it is for things to spread like wildfire if people are willing to let it spread. But the truths that we have shared for 19 years, people like us, sadly, there are not too many of us. Not because we're special, it's just because people just don't like the concept. Don't like, because it just forces them to challenge so many things that they have held dear, so many sacred cows. And they just don't want to kill those cows and eat a hamburger. They're starving to death, but they don't want to eat the hamburger. You know, they don't want to kill the cow. They'd rather do everything else on earth than kill the cow. It's like, no, your problem is going to be solved if you kill the cow. No, I can't kill the cow. You need to kill the cow. No, I can't kill the cow. Well, then you're going to die. No, I'm going to find some other way, but I'm not killing the cow. All right, go ahead. Don't kill the cow. So the thing is that, it's not envy. Please don't misunderstand. I don't have any envy. I have no envy for the guy. Envy is for someone that you admire, that you wish you were like them, but you're not like them. I'd rather be where I am than be him. A million times, no matter how sad and complicated my life has been, I'd rather be me than him. Because I know where he's headed. He's headed nowhere. And I don't care if he's become this famous person. That's not an envy thing. It's just that I feel sad. You're like saying to the country, you react to that. You react to this meaningless song, but you don't react to any truth. And it wouldn't matter to me personally whether people cared who I was or anything. It's just the ideas. That's what I'm saying. The ideas never caught on. And it wasn't because they were not coming from a person of notoriety. It's just that the people just did not want the ideas. They just did not want to do the change because the people were averse to change. So he was saying, oh, we're not going to survive another generation. Well, news flash, it's not another generation, it's a few weeks. Then he says, he calls out, I'm reading from the article again, he calls out the media and other cultural institutions which constantly seek to divide the American people rather than bringing us together. And I just visualized Rodney King, you know, in that press conference in 1990-something, saying, can we all get along? And the sad thing is, when he said it, it was relevant. But unfortunately, everybody who said the same thing since then has basically misused those words. This is not about the country being divided and the media and the cultural institutions trying to divide us. It's as if to say, don't talk to me about abortion, because that divides us. That puts us in one camp, the pro-abortion camp, the pro-life camp, and we don't want that. That's what's destroying this country, because we're getting divided by all these ideas. And I go, my goodness. So, in other words, in order for division not to be the problem, we just have to be a country of people who don't stand for anything. We don't stand for anything. We don't believe in anything. That's the only way for us to get along. Without division. And that's not, is that where we want to go? Is that the strategy? So it just tells you that the guy was being hailed as this champion of the conservative voice and all that, and railing against the evil, corrupt Democrats controlling Washington. He's none of that. He's just a moron who's saying, can't we all get along? Oh, I just hate all this division. Oh, so horrible. And in the meantime, you know, the people who are destroying the country just keep saying, believe what I believe. Believe what I believe. And that's what the liberals are always saying, imposing themselves on everybody else. So anybody who starts opposing them is the source of division. But when they try to impose their ideas on us, then suddenly we should all just get along and follow along. You know, wear the mask, get injected. Even though the science is against it, even though common sense and the science and the facts are all against it, I should get along because I should not be divisive. And then the writer very naively writes, that's a scary prediction, you know, talking about the prediction of one generation, but it's sadly believable. Sadly believable. So he's still saying, it's a scary prediction, but I think it's possible, very possible. We only have one generation. And I keep saying, we only have a few weeks left, you morons. You only a few weeks left. And you're still like saying, I think it's believable, one generation. And then the next paragraph is even sadder. There are too many people in the country who believe America is inherently evil. They don't understand our history, our constitution, and laws, and even why they're so lucky to live here. Anthony's right. We do need to change course. So the guy doubles down on the conservatism. We need to understand our history, our constitution and laws, our constitution, our wonderful constitution. But sadly, our country is dying. And yes, we need to change course. Yes, we need to change course from worshiping the constitution, worshiping our history, worshiping our failed law system. But he doubles down on not changing course and then ironically ends with saying, we do need to change course. It's like, I read this and I go, my goodness, that's why we're dying. And it's so sad. So let me just go to another article about Mr. Oliver Anthony, superstar. And again, I have no envy for it. I hope you
you get that. I feel no envy whatsoever for the man. No envy. It's just disappointment. That's what I feel. And anger at how people are so stupid and don't understand what they follow and what they uphold and what they uplift. The article was posted on August 25th, so it was the day before this recording, and it was posted on the dailymail.com, and the title of it is, it was written by Fiona Connor for the Daily Mail, and it says, the title, Oliver Anthony laughs at use of rich men north of Richmond at GOP presidential debate and says he wrote a song about, quote, those people. So I'm going to read part of the article. Singer Oliver Anthony has laughed off his song, Rich Men North of Richmond, being used at the Republican debate, saying he wrote that song about those people. The former factory workers hit shot to number one on the Billboard Hot 100 and Apple Music charts earlier this month, after his moving YouTube performance captivated millions of people. But in a new video, Anthony says he's felt bothered by, quote, seeing people wrap politics up in this, unquote. The singer has insisted he's a centrist when it comes to politics and has refused to describe himself as a liberal or conservative. Now, you may say, if you've been listening to these recordings, well, aren't you kind of the same thing? Because these recordings criticize liberals and criticize conservatives. But I'm not a conservative. I'm not a liberal. I'm maybe closer to a conservative than to a liberal. I sound like a conservative maybe 80% of the time. But then there's that 20% that is so repulsive to conservatives, they would kick me out of any conservative club if they heard me talking about the other 20%, because that's the 20% that we need to get over the edge and complete the truth that is missing in conservatism. Because that 20% is a truth that's only accessible if you kill those sacred cows. But conservatives don't want to kill the cows, so they never see the 20%, and they find the 20% repulsive. So, but the fact that if conservatives had the truth, I'd have no problem calling myself a conservative. If you see what I'm trying to say, it's not like I don't want to have the label of liberal or conservative, so I'm criticizing everybody just because I want to show how wise I am. Because that's one kind of fallacy that many people have about what wisdom is. Oh, if you criticize everything, then you are wise because you're not here nor there, so you must be right there in the middle of the truth. And that's not necessarily true. It's not a question of, I'm neither left nor right. I'm in the middle, therefore I'm in the truth. No. See, the thing is, I personally would never call myself a centrist, because a centrist is a person who doesn't believe in anything. That's what a centrist is. I'm a moderate, 50% in everything. We've talked about this in the previous audio snippet, if I remember correctly. It's not a question of how much percentage I have and getting as close to 50% as possible. The question is, am I in the right percentage? Sometimes the right percentage is 100%. Sometimes the right percentage is 97%. Sometimes the right percentage is 0%. Sometimes the right percentage is 0.5%. Sometimes the right percentage is on the extremes of the spectrum. As we said before, if you're going to cook a meal and there's a chance that some of the ingredients are poisonous, and you have to make sure the ingredient is not poisonous, would a 100% poison-free dish be acceptable to you? Or is that too radical or too extreme? Do you want 50% poison and 50% non-poison just to be centrist, just to be a moderate, just to seem like you're balanced? No, you'd be a moron if you wanted to. No, I demand 50% poison in my dish because I don't want to be an extremist. I don't want to be a radical. No, you want 100% poison-free dish with 0% poison. That's how extreme you are about not eating poison, right? So extremism or radicalism is not necessarily wrong. The question is, what is the right amount? That's what you should worry about. When this guy says, I'm neither a left conservative nor a liberal, I'm a centrist, he's saying, I'm right in the middle between the two. I don't want to take sides. I want to be in the middle. But see, both sides are in the wrong neighborhood. The truth is over here in this other neighborhood, and these people are separating themselves right, left, and then this guy puts himself right in the middle. But they're all in the wrong neighborhood. The truth is over here on this other side. And they're all just choosing sides in that other neighborhood where there's no truth, where the truth doesn't exist, really exist. So I don't want to be in the middle of nowhere. That's where this guy is. He's in the middle of nowhere. The truth is over here on this other side. That's where I want to be. Here in the truth, there is no, there is no right, left. There's no center. The truth is the truth. It is what it is. So, okay. Then I'm going to continue reading here. On Wednesday night, the popularity of the track turned into a discussion point on at the GOP debate. And by the way, as you may know, if you're listening to this recording around the time when it was recorded, that there was this GOP debate, I forget where, I think in Milwaukee. I don't remember even where it was. I don't care, really. Who cares? Who wins now that the country's about to die? But the thing is that Trump was not in the debate. He was doing an interview with Tucker Carlson, I think his name is, instead. So in this GOP debate, they talked about the song and asked, you know, it says here, they asked, why is the song striking such a nerve in this country right now? What do you think it means? And Ron DeSantis replied, saying, our country's in decline. This decline is not inevitable. It's a choice. We need to send Joe Biden back to his basement and reverse American decline. And I'm sure that there must have been some applause when he said that. But the thing is that, you know, DeSantis is also, yeah, we are in decline. Everybody knows we're in decline. America is in decline. But and he knows how bad it is. But he keeps saying, it's not inevitable. Oh, we can make it back. We just need to kick those. Exactly what we were saying a moment ago, and without intending to. The conservatives are always saying the problem is the tenants in the house. That's what's ruining the country. We just need to kick those tenants out of the house, and then we'll be fine again, and get back to our core traditional values. No, it's our core traditional values that have led to what we are. It was very subtle. They were subtly wrong. That's what was so deceitful and destructive about them. They had so much truth in them that they sounded very true, but there was a core of falsehood in them. And that core of falsehood is what's led to the demise of the country. So the decline is inevitable. And it is inevitable because they keep claiming it's not. And I know that sounds weird, but it is inevitable because they keep claiming it is not. And their reason for claiming that is they believe that all they need to do is return to the past. It says here, so this Oliver Anthony apparently recorded a video from inside his truck. And it says, speaking from inside his truck as rain poured down outside, Anthony said on Friday that while it was great having the song recognized, but found it funny the song was used among people who it was aimed at. Oh, and it sounds, oh my goodness, oh, that's a zinger, you know, oh my goodness, what a clever, wise man, you know. And then all the conservatives jump on that, you know, especially because Trump wasn't there. And said, oh yeah, he's poo-pooing all these rhinos who are trying to run against Trump, our savior, the one on whose hopes the country, on whose shoulders the country rests now. But I would be very, would have been very curious to see what people, what these conservatives would have said had Trump been there. This guy said the same thing, and he would have said the same thing. Believe you me, he would have said exactly the same thing. And then I would have said, well, what do you think of him now? after you put him at number one on the Billboard charts, instead of listening to the truth. So the thing is that it says here, quote, "It was funny seeing it at the presidential debate," unquote, he says with a wide smile, because it's like, I wrote that song about those people, you know. So for them to have to sit there and listen to that, that cracks me up, unquote. And then he said this. He said it's also humorous seeing the response to it, quote, quote, "That song has nothing to do with Joe Biden. It's a lot bigger than Joe Biden. That song is written about the people on that stage and a lot more too, not just them, but definitely them. It's hard to get a message out about your political ideology or your belief about the world in 3 minutes and some change, but I do hate seeing that song weaponized. I see the right trying to characterize me as one of their own, and I see the left trying to discredit me, I guess in retaliation, that," and I can't say the word, "that excrement, it's got to stop." He didn't say excrement, of course, but I can't say what he said. He says it's been frustrating people try to identify him with him like he is one of them. And as I am scrolling down, there's a photo of a guy who has a picture of the flag on the back of his t-shirt. And above the flag, it says, "In Oliver, we trust." that's how stupid this country is. So it says here, "It's aggravating seeing certain musicians and politicians act like we're buddies, like we're fighting the same struggle here, like we're trying to present the same messages," unquote, he added. Then he says he's focusing on living in the present and making the right decisions from here on out. And he says, "I feel thankful to be given this opportunity. The music side is exciting and blah, blah, blah." So he goes on and then he says, Anthony stressed, he says, "Like, nobody's Washington, D.C. No one in the federal government is coming to save us," he added. Anthony stressed the importance of forming relationships and bonds within local communities, stating, quote, "The people that are going to save us is each other. Local relationships," unquote. He also noted the troubling trend of increasing disconnect, even among families. Quote, "Even families are torn apart. I've seen this in my old household at times, where you'll have a whole family under the same roof, and instead of spending time with each other and caring about each other, every one of them is just sitting there looking at their own piece of technology, completely self-absorbed in that and not in each other," unquote. So you can see within the heart of this guy's a moron. He's a moron. So to him, the solution is forming relationships and bonds within local communities. Oh, yes. That's what it's going to save us. Relationships with each other. Kumbaya. This is all matriarchal nonsense. People who live by the server and organizer mentality. The personalities that are matriarchal female. These are the people who talk like that. Morons. You think that's the problem we have? Oh, that we don't talk to each other at the dinner table? That we're all focused on our phones? That's what's killing the country? And we just need to emphasize the importance of local communities? Oh, also, he must be for the 15-minute cities and all that, I imagine. But that aside, that's him, a moron, who thinks that, oh, we're just dividing each other too much and all this conflict instead of loving each other and caring about each other and this and that the other. And that's the guy who's the champion of conservatives right now. And what he said, I found this very interesting when he said, looking back, scrolling back here, when he said, "That song has nothing to do with Joe Bite Me. It's a lot bigger than Joe Bite Me." And he said, and then he says that song's written about the people on that stage, on the RNC, on the Republican debate stage. But he said that song has nothing to do with Joe Biden. He didn't say that song, and then he said it's a lot bigger than Joe Biden. But that song has nothing to do with Joe Biden, one of the most nefarious animals, monsters in the history of this dying country. And that song has nothing to do with him. So he didn't say that song is above, more than just about him. He didn't say that. Notice he didn't say it's more than just about him. He said it has nothing to do with him. So all of his criticism of all the rich people in Washington and all this corruption was that has nothing to do with Joe Biden. Do you see what he's saying there? But then he says it is written about the people on the Republican stage. Those Republicans, that's it's about them. But it's not about Joe Biden. Do you see what he's saying there? And then this guy, you know, put out a second song, something about I want to go home. And the song kind of makes it sound like he wants to die and go to heaven. And then he ends because the world is so messed up and so much division. And I don't know what other garbage he must have sung in the song. But then all the conservatives were, you know, kind of hailing him because the song ends with a quote from the Bible. Something about it's Mark something. Where it says, what if a man gains the whole world but loses his soul or something like that? And, he's a Christian, he's a conservative, he believes in traditional values and so forth. Listen, yeah, I mean, he can quote all the Bible he wants. I don't give a damn. The guy's a moron. The guy is an absolute moron. But he's a self-righteous moron at that. He feels wise by being this man who stands above the fray of the division and the politics and the controversies and all that. We just need to talk to each other and love each other. Yes. Oh, yes. The abortionists and the anti-abortionists should just, you know, put down their picket signs and hug each other and will it be all okay. And then the abortionists can go to the abortion clinic after the hug and abort the fetus, and the anti-abortionist can you know, go to church and sing in the choir, and everybody will be happy, right? And but in the meantime, the fetus will be dead, and the destruction will continue. But on the surface, we all loved each other and hugged each other's hearts out. So that's the moron whose song hit number one in the Hot 100. In America, and the people, and now, you know, conservatives wearing t-shirts with the flag and with the phrase "In Oliver We Trust" above it. To a certain extent, I feel sorry for, you know, I feel bad for criticizing him because he supposedly sang the song to deal with his depression, but, and I'm getting depressed just listening to his stupidity. And I sometimes feel like I want to go home too. Because it's so frustrating to listen to all this stupidity. A country full of idiots. No wonder the song went to number one. In a country of morons, it's fitting that a moron song would make it to number one so rapidly. We also want to share the final story, and looks like we might not get to the guy that we wanted to talk about, but it felt important. I feel the need to share all these stories in this recording, including this last one. And it's and you may already know about this. I'm going to read a little bit from an article posted on the BBC.com. It posted 4 days ago, so that would make it the 22nd of August, I believe, 2023. So the title of it says Earthquake Shakes Parts of California During Storm. So as you may know, we talked about this in the previous audio recording, that a storm, Hillary, called Hillary, fittingly, and we talked a little bit about what that meant. Trump never dealt with Hillary, so Hillary came and is part of, you know, Hillary is a strong force behind the scenes in the destruction of Trump and the kicking him out of the White House thing. It's as if she made a deal with Trump behind the scenes, and Trump was so proud of it, where she said, I'm not going to challenge the election of 2016, but you don't put me in jail. They shook hands, and that's where it ended. But then, being the traitor that she is, the treacherous snake that she is, Hillary went behind the scenes and said, yeah, I'm not going to overtly try to topple him, but I'm going to start working behind the scenes with my fellow demon rats to get rid of him. And I know that she was a strong force behind the scenes in all the shenanigans, all the Machiavellian stuff that they did to eventually get Trump out of the White House. So the thing is, Hillary hit, and as I was sharing before, I may have shared this, I don't remember, but when I heard that the tropical storm was going to hit the West Coast, I said, oh my goodness, this is just a sign that the country is dying, that these are the last days, because I said to myself, I don't remember in my lifetime, and sadly my lifetime covers a lot of years, and I said, in my lifetime I have never heard of a tropical storm hitting the West Coast. You know, you always hear about storms hitting Florida, hitting the Gulf Coast, hitting North Carolina or South Carolina or whatever, you know, always hitting the East Coast or the Gulf, but never the West Coast. And there's a very logical reason for that. It's that the flow of air is always from east to west. So the storms form in the Atlantic and they come and hit the East Coast from the west. So when storms form in the Pacific, they usually go west, go out into the ocean. And they don't get a chance to go into the U.S., if you catch my drift. It's because California is on the west side, and it's kind of on the western edge from Mexico. As Mexico grows west, from east to west on a slanted coast, so it's not as if California is, I don't know how to explain it, but the thing is that the geography and the flow of air on Earth always is conducive to storms blowing out into the Pacific Ocean and never hitting California. But this one did. And it did it kind of by sneakily going up. It went north from the south, going north, and it went on a westerly, slightly westerly direction, which is kind of contrary to how storms usually flow. They go from east to west. This one went from west to east, but slightly. It was more vertical than, you know, than horizontal, but it was almost vertical, but with a little slant to the west, and it was aimed exactly at Southern California, and it went through Baja California, which is Mexico, and it did a lot of damage there, lots of damage in Tijuana, and then it went into Southern California, and then, yes, it was true. I found out that this was the first time in 84 years that California had been hit by a tropical storm. And then I said to myself, well, someone can say, well, it happened 84 years ago and the world and America didn't die 84 years ago, so how can you claim that this time it's different, this is a sign of America dying? Well, there are several reasons, because first of all, there's so many things happening all across the country that 84 years ago there might have been this isolated incident of a storm hitting Southern California, but that was 84 years ago, and that was an isolated thing. They didn't have everything that's going on right now with the high pressure system that's been stuck in the middle of the country producing this excessive heat. and at the same time, some storm hitting, blowing past Hawaii, downing power lines and causing a fire that was the greatest disaster in Hawaii history. And Hawaii is the 50th and last state. It's as if to say, the truth is saying, you're done. This and one of the ways of certifying it is by wreaking destruction, wreaking havoc in your 50th and last state of the union, because your union is ending now. Your country is dead, and boom, the stamp of that all that fire is the seal of the fire of the truth coming down on Americans, saying you're done, you're sealed, your destiny is over. And that was happening just as this storm hit. And then you have all the other stuff happening across the country. So there's a difference from 84 years ago, but there's one more difference. And this difference is to certify, yes, this is a signal that this country is over. And it's this story. As people across Southern California sheltered from Storm Hillary, another natural disaster hit, a magnitude 5.1 earthquake. So while, you know, the storm was pouring rain down and people were sheltering and all that, then suddenly an earthquake, a 5.1, and that's not a something to sneeze at. 5.1 is pretty strong. And it says its epicenter was northwest of Los Angeles, and hashtag Hurricane was soon trending on social media. It did not cause major damage, and the hurricane has also since been downgraded to a post-tropical cyclone. And there were no damages. And I find it interesting, the whole BBC article is about downplaying the earthquake. Oh, this is not the, there was an earthquake in 1992, the Northridge earthquake. That really caused damage. This really didn't. But it says here, seismologist Dr. Lucy Jones told NBC News it was interesting, quote, interesting, to have the earthquake near Ojai. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, O-J-A-I. I'm pronouncing it Ojai, but maybe it's O-J, O-J, O-Jai, or Ojai. I'm pronouncing the J as they would in Spanish. The J sounds like an H. So that's why I'm saying Ojai. Not sure if its origin is Spanish or what, but OJ makes me think of OJ Simpson, and Ojai makes me think of Ohio and lots of other things. But regardless, the thing is, it was interesting to have the earthquake near Ojai, and was the, quote, first time we've had a five since 1932 in exactly this location, and even within the Ventura Basin. Yeah, 1932, that would make it 89 years ago. So the first time we've had a five since 1932 in exactly this location, and even within the Ventura Basin. So two very unusual events happening exactly at the same time. An earthquake, a tropical storm that had not hit Southern California in 84 years, and then an earthquake that had not happened in that exact location, that strong, in 89 years, and they happen exactly at the same time. Do you think that's a coincidence? No, it's just a way of certifying this is not just another quirky meteorological event. This is part of the sealing of the country's fate. The country is dead. And then it says two aftershocks followed the initial quake, measuring a magnitude 3.1 and 3.6. And the 5.1 just hits me in the face because if you take out the point, the decimal, 51 is the number of deception. That's what 51 represents. It's always represented that to me, and as I've encountered it in my life, it's always related to some deception. I'm not sure why. And Hillary did a deception on Trump. And it's part of the liberals and their deception. And that's why it hit the left coast, the leftists and their deception. That's what it all represents. It says Dr. Jones warned more aftershocks were likely over the next few days. the quake hit at the same time as post-tropical cyclone Hillary, which left some residents unsure where they should seek cover. Then they start comparing it to other earthquakes, like, oh, this is like a nothing burger, and all that. But there was no damage, just no toppling of buildings, but it was a sign. It was an indication. I'm doing this right now. The storm is hitting, the quake is hitting, because the country is dying. That's how the truth is saying to this country, you are dying, and you're dying by your own deception. And then the article ends, tropical storms are unusual in the area because dry air, cool water, and wind conditions off the coast tend to suppress hurricanes. So this is not a coincidence. So we just wanted to say that, and I think that just certifies, you know, the fate of the country, which is caused by all the other things we've talked about in the previous articles we went through. It seems like we're not going to get to the guy we wanted to talk about. But I think the theme in all of these stories is the same thing again. In the first story, we talked about extreme agenda activists are turning to constitutional amendments to enshrine abortion into law in these states. Interesting, it says extreme agenda. Now that I think about that, the extremists. So the extremism of the left. And ironically, they engage in extremism, but it's extremism about the wrong thing. But conservatives never want to be extreme. They don't want to be revolutionaries. They don't want to change things. They just want to keep things the way they are. So it is radicalism moderated, always moderate. You don't want to go extreme, but you cringe when other people do go extreme, and extreme successfully. But it's extreme to destroy the country, and when you need to go extreme to save the country. But being extreme means killing the sacred cows. They go, I can't go for that, no can do. And then the other story that we talked about, Bannon saying, you know, our hopes rest on Trump, and then putting him in the same league as Washington and Lincoln. And what a sad combination, you know, Lincoln. So he's doubling down. This is the third time in history. So that destiny and fate of an individual have been tied directly to the fate of the nation. And it's a conservative not being willing to understand that they need to change. Then the next story, we talked about the adversary shifting strategies, and we must do the same. Again, the conservatives say, I'm not going to be extremist. I don't want to change things, but we just need to finagle things here and there, and we need to tweak this and tweak that and change our strategy a bit to adjust to this enemy, this extreme radical enemy. So they keep fighting extremism, but they don't realize that they need to be extremists themselves or radicals themselves. And radical means I'm going to have to kill some cows, but they don't want to go there. Then the other story, warning, they are trying to normalize the cancellation of, oh, we didn't talk about this. I skipped that one. They're trying to normalize the cancellation of the 2024 election. What once seemed impossible now seems very plausible. And this story, this story is basically about how this was posted on NOQ Report or AmericaFirstReport.com by J.D. Rucker, the fellow we've been talking about. The reason why I was drawn to this article is that it goes on and on about all how they're trying to steal the election, but it doesn't really offer the real solution to the election fraud problem. The election fraud problem, the root of it, at the end of the day, as we've said a million times, is that the founding fathers left in the Constitution that it was up to the states to regulate their elections, even when they were federal. So in the at the state level, you have these local communities, as Oliver Anthony would put it, of all these corrupt party people at the state level who collude to make fraud possible at the local level. And because it happens locally, it's more insulated, more isolated, more controlled, and more difficult to monitor from the outside or prevent from the outside. And when there's election fraud, you have to fight it at every state level. There's no standardized, clear federal or national rules on how to run an election. What constitutes an election that needs to be redone? How do you identify who can vote, who cannot vote? All these things need to be federalized. And conservatives go, oh, no more. No, we don't want power to the federal government. The state government should have the power. Well, they have the power, and that's why they're doing all these local frauds at the local state level in the states where the Democrats have a lot of influence, but they don't want to see that. So J.D. Rucker goes on and on ranting about all that's wrong, and then he says at the end, as usual, I hope I'm wrong. I don't think I am. If we've learned anything that the last 3 years is that the powers that be are bold because they know that their time is short. Their desperation could result in our destruction. Pray for this nation. So he's still thinking we can still make it out, but he doesn't know how to get us out. The truth knows how to get us out, but he's not listening to the truth. He's listening to his sacred cows, and the cows are going moo, so he just goes moo too. And so sad. He says, the powers that be are bold because they know their time is short. And I go, my goodness, he doesn't realize your time is short. Not just theirs, your time is short. And their desperation could result in our destruction. Could result in our destruction. So, again, it's people who just don't want to see the truth. And who complain left and right, but they don't want to eat the hamburger that's going to save their life, because the hamburger meat is killing the cow. And then we talked about the story of, where Trump says we did nothing wrong, I did nothing wrong, and everybody knows it. And as we said, that's what conservatives are saying all the time. And they don't want to admit that we have some fundamental mistakes we need to change. Not the liberals. They're gone. They're dead. They're worthless. Rubbish. I'm talking about the conservatives. But they keep saying, no, we're right. And in the meantime, the BRICS summit and all these countries joining, and the world is preparing for the demise of America. And then in the meantime, we have a moron song hitting number one, showing how possible it is for America to have a message catch fire. The only problem is the right message never catches fire because America's just not interested. Because we know what we're doing. Thank you very much. You can go to hell. We are going to continue with our fight our way because we know the path to victory. Donald Trump believes he knows the path to victory. The art of the deal. All these other things. And look how it's worked out for them. Look at how conservatives, how things have worked out for them. They just don't want to admit it. And in the meantime, you have a moron song hitting number one, a guy who says, all we need is love. Maybe it's going to be his new song, or a cover of the Beatles song. All we need is love. We need to hug each other and tell each other how much we love each other and stop dividing ourselves by talking about all these controversial things and putting our faith in each other in our local communities and buying local and walking 15 minutes to our to get everything we need and not looking at our smartphones as much, and then we'll survive. Wonderful. And that's the guy. And his songs are not about Joe Bite Me. Oh, no. But they are about the GOP candidates. that's the guy that Americans are hailing as a great folk hero. And yes, he quotes the Bible, so that makes him oh yeah, that must mean that he's telling the truth. And then we talked about the hurricane that hit Southern California along with an earthquake, as a sign that yes, we are dying, and it will be over. I think you can almost put a fork in it, as they say. You know, it's done. It's already done. It's cooked. The goose has been cooked, and it will be served in a few weeks. But I'm not going to eat that goose because it's going to be tainted with death. In short, we have been talking about the unwillingness to change, how we as a people, especially conservatives, have not wanted to go extreme. We complain about the extremism of the left, but we don't want to go extreme, and because extreme is like, you know, like that story in the Bible about Abraham and Isaac, and it says in the Bible that you know, God told Abraham, "Give me your son Isaac and sacrifice." And Abraham's, you know, had a lot of thoughts about it, but he went ahead and did it, and he took his son, his only son, who he had according to the Bible, given or begotten in his late years, miraculously, against all odds, born to a woman who was very old herself, and then he was told, give him up, you have to sacrifice him to me. And he took him up to the mountain, to, you know, the top of a mountain, and he tied him up and had him all ready to go, and he was going to, you know, drive the knife through his heart, or wherever he was going to hit him, strike him, and then an angel appeared, according to the Bible, and said, "Stop. I've seen that you have sacrificed him in your heart, and that's all I needed to know." And that's what we were being asked for. And the sad thing is, we were not even being asked to sacrifice our only son, our only beloved son. We were being asked to sacrifice a cow, a stupid cow that was just, you know, dumping its excrement all over the lawn, and we have to clean up all the excrement every day. And we were being told, just kill the cow, make sandwiches, bring the neighborhood, do a barbecue, you know, invite the whole neighborhood, do a barbecue, celebrate, kill the cow, just kill the cow. "No, I can't kill the cow." Well, you know, that's too extremist. To say that our founding fathers were wrong, that's extremism. To say that our constitution is flawed, extremism. No, that's what the radicals say all the time. Yes, and that's true. And I've heard, there was another story that I didn't pull up, but it's somewhere recently, where it was saying how the Democrats are trying to rewrite the Constitution, that the Constitution is flawed to them. But yeah, they think that it's flawed, but they think of it as flawed for the wrong reasons, because to them, it should have, you know, all the Marxist rubbish in it. So they would want a Marxist constitution. And so whenever somebody says we should change the constitution, conservatives always go, you know, "Danger, Mr. Will Robinson, danger, danger, danger. Somebody's trying to turn us into a Marxist country." And no, the ones who were speaking the truth were saying, "Change the Constitution. Sacrifice that cow. Stop worshiping the Founding Fathers." These were flawed men. Very flawed men. They were very brave in many ways. And they said some very wise words. But if you dig deeper into the behind the words, they were saying and believing some very unpleasant things. Like, for example, we may talk a little more about this in another audio snippet, maybe not, but Thomas Jefferson was, he did not believe in the Jesus of miracles. He did not believe in that. He was a deist or deist, or however you want to pronounce it. And he believed in a reason, God of reason, quote unquote, whatever the hell that meant to him. But it was more of this kind of natural God. And he said, I am a Christian at heart. He said once, I'm kind of paraphrasing. And he said, but I am a Christian just like Jesus would define himself when he was alive with us. So, but basically he's claiming that Jesus believed in reason, but reason in a very 18th century enlightenment sort of way, not reason in the deeper sense, but like, you believe in what's reasonable, what the mind can understand. And part of that meant that in his world, all the miracles and everything was just added to the Bible as extra stuff. And he believed that the Bible was, that Christianity was corrupted by the apostles, by Paul and all these people who turned Christianity into something it was not. That's what Thomas Jefferson believed. You can go look it up. That's what he would say. That's what he was quoted as saying, and what he literally wrote with his own hands. He did not believe in you. I'm talking to you, conservative Christian, who claim to believe in a certain God. You go to church every Sunday. That's the guy you worship. He was opposed to everything you stand for. He did not believe in a supernatural God of miracles. He believed the Bible was flawed. That's why, I don't know if you've heard, I think there's out there something called the Jefferson Bible. He took the Bible, took the parts that he liked, and he put them in a book, and he called it the Jefferson Bible. Like, the Bible without the impurities. That's your hero, Thomas Jefferson. That's your sacred cow. This farting, doing the global warming thing all over the place, and defecating on the lawn, and you have to clean up every day the mess that he's leaving behind. And you don't want to kill him. You want to keep him alive. You want to keep... George Washington was a Freemason, even though I consider him one of the greatest... maybe top three presidents of all time. He was a very brave man, but he was a Freemason, and the Freemasons have this hierarchical thing going on. So it's all about castes, and anything that has involved castes is just a sign of elitism. And maybe that's why they were all into the Senate thing that we've talked about, and all these because the Senate is a manifestation of elitism. We talked about that ad nauseum in other audio clips. That's George Washington for you. Going back to Thomas Jefferson, he was a slaveholder. He kept talking about freedom and independence and the Declaration of Independence and all that stuff. And then he goes back home and owns slaves and doesn't let them go. And he speaks out against slavery, but at the same time, he doesn't let the slaves go. That's your sacred cow. You don't want to kill it. And we could go on. There were some laudable founding fathers who are not mentioned that much. It's ironic. The ones that are the most praiseworthy are generally the ones that get talked about the least. But that's why we are dying. We don't want to kill the sacred cows, and because conservatives think that's extremism, so they would rather. Put this Oliver Anthony at number one, thinking that he's on their side, then go kill the cows. And that's why we're dying in a few weeks. So hopefully next time we will talk about this, the other fellow. But it's all related. It's all related to the theme of radicalism and extremism and trying to be moderate without... dealing with the truth. Thank you very much for listening.